welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. We're on the air Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. and Monday mornings at 1 a.m., streaming live at those times. We archive the programs, the podcasts, the MP3s, whatever you want to call them, at SoundCloud, iTunes, as well as the radio shows page at richarddugan.com, as well as the homepage for 2018. And we hope that you will indeed take advantage of our guest's website, which we also link to. And you can go to that website. We'll be giving you our guest's website for today's program here in just a few moments. We always encourage you to investigate and research and, you know, do the due diligence, as it were, as far as your personal growth and development. That's up to you. And information, what was it I heard years ago? Information is power. Well, I suppose in one sense that's true. There is a certain element of truth to that. We certainly hope that you will use that power wisely. But we also hope that you will use the power, get educated, get informed, and become aware of what is out there and what is available to you. And that's why we bring so many different perspectives, so many different ideas, concepts, philosophies, beliefs, etc., etc. I like leaning towards what Greg Braden said to us some years ago, and he's going to be back on this program here in 2018. It's been a couple of years since we've had him on, but he shared with us from his book, The Healing Power. I believe it was The Healing Power or The Healing of Belief, something along those lines. And he talked about how we're going to transition from a place of a belief to a place of knowing. That it isn't going to be a question of, I believe this or I believe that. It's going to be a question of, I know this. I know this. And a lot of folks, including our guest, I believe, kind of come from that perspective because they know it because it works for them. It is something that is very powerful in their lives, and they want to share it with you. And that's why we have Sonia Grace here on the program. I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program today to share with us the things that we're going to be talking about today about your latest work.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on. I'm very excited to be here with you.
I love the fact that, and it's intrigued me for years, although I haven't really studied it, and I wish I had. I'm not dead yet, so I still have a chance. Mm-hmm. But you tie in a couple of different traditions, ancient traditions, into the latest work that you now have out and available for our listeners to investigate, Dancing with Raven and Bear. And it is both Native American, but it is also Norwegian. Now, am I correct? Does it go back as far as and is inclusive of the Vikings?
You know, okay, so Dancing with Raven and Bear is a book of earth medicine and animal magic. And I wrote this book from my Native American heritage. Mm-hmm. I'm Choctaw, I'm Cherokee, I'm adopted on the Hopi Reservation. I've been a part of Hopi culture for decades. I'm married to a Hopi man. So it's like I'm influenced. We're all influenced. You know, if you live in the Southwest like mm-hmm. me, mm-hmm. you know, you're influenced by the light and the colors. They're completely different than the Pacific Northwest where I was living. And so your palette changes. This is all my original artwork in the book. And I am, of course, also inspired by my Norwegian heritage, my dad's side of the family, all Norwegian. And both of these influences to my life have sort of created me to be the person that I am today. And I wrote these stories very much in the vein of my native heritage. So Bear and Raven become these, you know, these characters. Bear's a medicine man. Raven is sort of his trickster sidekick. And these two have different things that they share throughout the book that are really teaching stories. Because my work as a healer, day in and day out, I'm talking to people all over the world. I'm an energy surgeon. I literally am able to defy time and space and put myself in front of that person and work on their heart, their liver, their spleen, their kidneys, whatever the illness or problem is. I go in like a surgeon and repair valves and do triple bypasses and sew up lesions and fix hernias and all of that. So it's like that's my daily life, and I'm teaching all the time. You know, every time I open my mouth, I'm working with somebody to help them better understand what their illness is. What is the emotional component to that illness? And I do processing work with them to get at that as well as the healing work. So this book is chock full of those kinds of lessons, learning, you know, grounding, dancing with Raven, you know, understanding what your abilities are, holding darkness at bay, power, dreaming, death, you know, finding your medicine path, you know, exploring love from a different angle. So it's all these things that we deal with daily.
Well, I have to say that when we start talking about the natural world and divine natural, mm-hmm. the divine natural world, let's put it that way, mm-hmm. And the wisdom thereof, it's not exclusive to one part of the planet. It's all over the planet. The problem that I've noticed, Sonia, is that our modern developed countries have almost completely blocked this out. And I've always felt over the years, especially in doing this program and my contact with the various and diverse guests that we've had on the program, nature is the greatest of all teachers. And that if we would just listen, we would be doing a whole lot better.
Oh, yes, I'm applauding what you just said. Yes, if we lived like we used to live before the industrial era, we lived closer to the earth, we lived tribally, we listened to the planet. We knew when something was coming, and that's why the whole tribe would pick up and move to a different place, because there was something of an event that was going to happen. Now we're all in this modern world tied to mortgages and jobs and things. So we are not allowed to be the, you know, nomadic people that we once were and move. And, you know, I have clients calling me daily saying, wow, I really feel like I need to move. I feel like I need to get to from here to here. And this migration that we're witnessing, which is this huge mass movement of people right now from one end of the country to the other, is to me the collective calling that we're all feeling from the earth.
Now, you raise an interesting point. So if we weren't so tied to the earth in the modern age, as you use the term mortgages and so forth.
Right.
For example, and we're still in it and coming to the end of it shortly, we're in the midst of, in the United States, hurricane season. And right. If we as a tribe knew, oh, hey, you know, there's a massive storm that's headed our way. We need to go further inland. The entire tribe would pick up and they would move and right. Let the storm do what it's going to do. Mm-hmm. And when it's over, we would go back.
Absolutely.
But
absolutely,
we don't do that. We stay there and we deal with the devastation mm-hmm. and then we rebuild. And I have to say that now, granted, I have lived. I was born and raised in Phoenix, Arizona. So I know about the Southwest. Mm-hmm. I know about the heat. I still would like to know who the brainchild was. I thought it was a good idea to live in the desert. However, when I say that, I speak more of modern times than I do of when I was a kid growing up, because when I was a kid growing up, you had 40-degree variances. Yeah, I'd get 110 degrees in the shade in the daytime, but it'd be down in the 70s at night. It doesn't do that anymore. Not in the summertime. But I jokingly, with great respect to these people who choose to do this, I wonder why these people keep rebuilding or putting mobile homes in Tornado Alley.
Right. Well, and really what we're facing is as the water is rising. I mean, there is no question about it. Yeah. And however you want to look at that mm-hmm. event happening, I think that the Earth naturally is cycling as she always has. Yes, we do contribute to this and probably kind of rushed it a little bit. But, you know, the water is rising and the people on the coastlines are what really concern me because, you know, some of these towns, I just saw one of the towns that was totally flooded from this big, you know, storm that hit on the East Coast in the Carolinas. It flooded like this 2 years ago. Yeah. So here we are 2 years later, it's flooding again. I know New Orleans deals with this regularly. All these places that are along the coastline, I think, you know, eventually we're going to have to rethink or move inland a little bit because we are warming. And as this planet warms, it's getting ready to actually cool. And we're moving towards an ice age. So this is the process. We have to warm up before we cool. And by the way, I'm up north. I'm in Prescott, so I'm much at a much higher elevation and not, thank God, down in Phoenix.
Yeah, well, and I've been to Prescott. My wife and I have been there many times. Mm-hmm. Beautiful town. Mm-hmm. And we drove, if you're familiar with the surroundings, there's a small town called Queen Creek. That's between, and most folks won't have any points of reference, but it's between a small town called Bumblebee, where you have to take the back roads to get there.
Right.
And we drove a non-four-wheel drive vehicle, but we made it back there. And then we decided to continue in the same direction. And, of course, it spit us out. I think it was in Prescott or in that general mm-hmm. area up there. Mm-hmm. But One of the things that I find so interesting about what I like to call the ancient wisdom teachings, and you're coming from that perspective from two different heritages, if you will. Mm-hmm. What are the similarities between these two in terms of their cohesiveness? What do you see as the similarities between the Norse and in this case, the Hopi or the Native American?
Yeah, I think there's just tremendous similarities. I mean, it's amazing how you can take something. I mean, here's a really good example. Odin, the Norse god, the main god of Norse mythology, he hung from the Tree of Life for 9 days. And the Tree of Life, during that time, he received the runes, and the runes are the symbols, the different symbols that he, that you know, to communicate. He received all 24 runes while he hung from the Tree of Life. Well, you know, it's like the first thing that comes to my mind is the Lakota tradition of Sundance, and that the men pierce up to the tree for 4 days and receive, you know, the vision that they're going to receive, whatever happens for them in that ceremony, which is originally designed and created so that they would suffer up for their family, for their wife, so that she would have less of a problem or pain in childbirth. So that was the original, you know, notion of Sundance, was the man suffered up for the wife bringing in life to the family. And here Odin's, you know, suffering, hanging from the tree for 9 days and receives these runes. And I marvel over that. It's like, wow, did the Lakota people actually receive Sundance from the Norse gods? Which I'm sure they would say, no, we received it from our own grandfathers and grandmothers. But I find it fascinating. There are lots of parallels. And I think from my last book that I wrote, Spirit Traveler, I really talk about these star beings or demigods that come through to Earth and influence all these different cultures and peoples and cross-pollinate with them, teaching them their ceremonies and whatnot. So these demigods, the Norse gods, the Hopi gods, the Tibetan gods, the Egyptian gods, all these star beings, which they are, and they're very benevolent, very, very evolved beings, and they're big. They're like 16 feet tall. They're huge. They're the closest to the angelic realm that I have found, and they came here to help shape humanity. So with that being said, of course there's going to be some similarities. Of course there's going to be some, some things that we see in art that's been depicted in, you know, pictographs or something that's been left behind on stone that we go, wow, here's this spiral and it's down here in South America, but we can find the same spiral up in Scotland on a stone in a stone circle, and then we can find it again, you know, at Chaco Canyon. So the point is that, yeah, we're all influenced by these star beings.
Also, we're influenced by the areas in which we live. Now, You and I are, both familiar with, of course, the area of Red Rock Country, Sedona, Arizona.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, it's been about 12, 13 years since I've been there, but I've seen some pictures. I've actually seen some commercials that were filmed there.
Mm-hmm.
And they've really done some beautiful improvements. It looks really great, but it's also not what it was the last time I visited and the years prior, because it's just become inundated with people and just all of this stuff. But I think one of the things that has been lost, or maybe just hasn't been found, it hasn't been lost, we just aren't aware of it. Yeah, there's that place. There might be one or two other places that a lot of people are familiar with in terms of maybe these vortices and so forth. But for the most part, when we think of ancient sites that are sacred and are profound in a spiritual, metaphysical sense, like Sedona, we don't think an awful lot of the United States as having a whole lot of those. We think of Egypt. We think of the Middle East. We think of places in Europe and Ireland and England, every place else but the United States.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of these places. But one gentleman told me, he said that you can make wherever it is that you reside a sacred place.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk to that a little bit?
Absolutely. I mean, that's what I love about Dancing with Raven and Bear is these stories take you on a journey. And the journey is through Bear and Raven and various characters that they meet along the way. And the way that I see our world and wherever we are on the world, it is our relationship, our personal relationship to the earth that is probably outweighs and is more important than any relationship we might have with another human being. There's a chapter in my book called Warriors of the Earth, and it's about a group of women who knew the old ways of earth medicine. And they were happy living their lives and singing their songs. They were in charge of different elements and different things and keeping the balance. And, you know, they had this beautiful village of consciousness. And they wanted to, you know, gain some more information. And they went to the one who rules the sea. And they asked him if he would grant them help with their magic, with what they're doing. And it's a really cool story because it talks about what we're talking about. It's like they start out in one place, they go out to sea, and they come back. It's a different place, but it looks just like the place that they left. And each of these stories has sort of that element of, wow, this is my reality, but shift just a few degrees and here's a different reality completely within that same story. And I so want to give people that sort of that opening of don't always take what you're seeing as verbatim, because we are not using the full capacity of our eyes. And for me, having been born this way and able to see the spirit realm, all levels of it, from angels down to, you know, the smarmiest entities, aliens, and everything else. This is my way of sort of opening that door a little bit for people and saying, you know, this is reality, but oh, look, Bear just changed into a man. And now that man is talking to this woman and they're having a conversation. So it's a really nice way of, you know, shifting one's reality. And that connection comes from the earth.
Extraordinary work that she has available for you and I, Dancing with Raven and Bear, a book, a book of earth medicine and animal magic. You may recall she was on our program, are you ready for this? 5 years ago, talking about Earthways, healing medicine for the soul, a practical guide to ceremonies for the earth. And we certainly would encourage you to investigate. Also, her website, which is, of course, quite easy to remember. It's SonjaGrace.com. SonjaGrace.com. And we hope that you will indeed check out her website and the work that she is doing. She also has some other works as well. Becoming an Angel is another work. Angels in the 21st Century. Spirit Traveler. A matter of fact, it's interesting. There's actually a song you know what? I'm going to say he's a dear friend of mine. I never met the man in person. I got to see him in concert once. But he had a beautiful song called Spirit Trail, Dan Fogelberg, who passed away some years ago. I believe it was from some form of cancer. And I noticed that he was infusing much of his music with the Native American spirit and soul, if you will. Mm-hmm. Wanted to ask you, this was a question that came into my mind a few days ago as I was thinking about and preparing for this interview. And I'm going to go ahead and ask the threefold question. It's not a long question. It's just got three parts to it, and maybe they're intertwined. But what is the reason and or the purpose, as well as the message to be conveyed from Dancing with Raven and Bear? And maybe we could broaden that to even the work that you do.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, that's a great three-part question. And this book, for me, was a way to speak to people, because I'm talking all day long. You know, I start at, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning. I end at 8 o'clock at night. And I'm, as I said earlier, talking to people all over the world and working with them, doing healing work, doing processing work, looking at past lives, clearing karma. You know, it's like I'm super, super attuned to people one at a time, working with them. And sometimes there is a great deal of resistance because people become attached to a story. They become attached. You know, maybe you've heard someone say, well, you know, back in 1979, when I had that accident, it changed everything. And they're so attached to that story. It has now molded their future because they keep going back to the past where they are wounded and they're bringing it to the forefront. Mm-hmm. So of course, I work with people on this. I work on helping them sort of detach from the story and have closure and healing. But sometimes it is hard to get the message through. And so I wrote these stories because I do a lot of processing with people's with the inner child. I do tons of inner child work. And I wrote these stories basically to help that person's inner child heal. I've been in meditation retreats that I'm teaching, and everybody's in, you know, meditation. And I've read one of these stories to the people in attendance. And it's like the shift that took place is phenomenal. And everyone came out of meditation and said, "Oh, please read us more." You know, and I thought, yes, that is such a powerful tool. And that is what my ancestors did. They were storytellers. I need to tell these stories so that it helps people open and release their resistance and their attachments to stuff that's really the very thing that's stopping them from, you know, moving forward in their life. My life years ago, I turned my life over to Creator and the Goddess, the Earth, and I said, I am in service. Wherever you need me to be, I will be. Whatever you need me to do, I will do. I am turning my life over to you in service. And so I have lived in service for years. I've been practicing as a healer for 36 years, and I know that there is not a moment in the day when, you know, I mean, stuff happens. Mm-hmm. I get a text message at 11 o'clock at night, and, you know, I'm getting up and going into my office and working on somebody. I mean, I'm in service, and that is not for, well, let me say this. Everyone needs to live their life, to me, from a place of being in service. And you brought up Become an Earth Angel. That book talks about that a lot. But I feel that not everyone is meant to be a healer, just like not everyone's meant to be an electrician. Mm. And we all have our area that we are able to shine and, you know, and give back to the people. Everybody has their gift that they bring to Earth. But we have to really celebrate in the difference of all of our gifts. And, you know, this person brings forth this and this person brings forth that. And so this book, Dancing with Raven and Bear, gives people the opportunity to just step out of their reality and step into a different reality and experience a healing, if you will, from shifting reality.
Mm. You know, shortly after we had you on the program back in 2013, mm-hmm. I can't believe it's been that long.
I know, I can't either.
We did a series of 12 programs in 2014. It was called Mythosophia, Exploring mm-hmm. the Depths of Myth and Wisdom. Mm-hmm. Now, I did not get much of an education in grammar school or high school in mythology. Yeah, I heard about the Greek gods and the Roman gods and those kinds of things. I've watched some of the Marvel comic movies and some of the others that seem to focus on them, Thor and what have you. I'm currently watching with my wife, and actually quite intrigued by the series that's put out. I believe it's by National Geographic called Viking. Mm-hmm. Which is supposed to be historically factual. Matter of fact, my wife did some research on the boat builder in the series. His mm-hmm. name is Floki, and he really wow. existed, and he actually founded Iceland. I believe wow. it was Iceland.
Mm-hmm.
And what was so impactful to me about that series, along with my co-host Will Lynn, who at that time was pursuing and has since achieved his PhD in mythology, was the fact that when we finished the 12 programs, I began to hear more and more about so many other areas of mythology. Mm-hmm. As we ended the series, it was the holidays, and I remember them telling the story of course, the World War I Christmas ceasefire. And the commentator was using the phrase, war mythology, because they were talking about, of course, how they were able to prove that, yes, they did stop fighting and they spent the day together having Christmas dinner and so forth. And then supposedly there was a soccer game and they don't know who won or who lost. And that was part of the mythology of war, if you will, or war myth. And I thought, really, there's mythology of war? And then it started to snowball, and I'm thinking, wow. And he even told me, Will told me, says, yeah, it's literally inexhaustible.
Right.
So the stories that you tell, in this case, in Dancing with a Raven and Bear, these could be considered mythological stories with not only a sort of a, and the moral of the story is, but also a great deal of symbolism, metaphors, and things of this nature that we not only can, but from your perspective, we need to learn from.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, speaking of war, one of the hardest things, and I would say the top number one thing for people to deal with is death. Their own death, other people dying. Death is like, you know, and we live in a time now where we are so separated from death. My God, in just 100 years, the amount of separation that we have from anything having to do with death is shocking. I mean, my grandmother, when she was growing up in Norway, had to care for her sister who died. I mean, like brush her hair and put clothing on her and care for the body until they did the burial. And this was the norm. This is how they did it. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's like now we barely even have any contact or any idea. And of course we have Western medicine that's keeping everybody alive way beyond what probably was truly creator's plan. You know? And so I have this chapter called Death. I want to read you the first paragraph of it.
Please.
Because I think it's really important that people understand there really is no death. There's just this transition that we make. And this is a beautiful chapter on what that really is like.
And this is from Dancing with Raven and Bear, Sonia Grace. Go ahead, Sonia.
She lay down on the rocks to sleep, and the ravens came to her with their medicine. The earth was cradling her like a baby. She remembered what it felt like to be held in her mother's arms. She told the ravens to keep watch over her and to let her know should anyone approach. She closed her eyes. She saw the rocks swirling around her like clouds in the sky. She sang a song she learned from the earth and asked Creator to help her. Creator looked down upon her and smiled and said, "I'm here watching over you. Let your journey begin." She felt herself leave her body and go up into the sky. She was inside a tunnel of light that made her laugh and feel weightless. She wondered why she hadn't done this sooner. Her body had been riddled with pain. Now she was swirling in an intensely bright light, all the time moving higher and higher through the tunnel. And she could see people around her, people she had known during her lifetime. Her parents held out their hands to her, and her grandmother put her arm around her waist, drawing her towards her. "Now you are home," she said. And the story goes on. But this is so, you know, years ago, I wrote the book, Angels in the 21st Century, A New Perspective on Death and Dying. And it's sort of a little handbook that, you know, if someone's sitting in the hospital and helping someone die, or they have a family member at home that's dying, or that person's dying themselves, it's a way, you know, for them to kind of connect in and understand what the process is. But in Dancing with Raven and Bear, this chapter on death is more about the process, not fearing the process, but really allowing. And, you know, we live in a time where it's almost like resisting things is promoted. Resisting getting older is promoted. Resisting being fat is promoted. Resisting, you know, eating bad foods or eating this or whatever. It's like we're so in resistance to everything. And some of it with good intention. Mm-hmm. But I feel like we've gotten off track with the organicness of this human life that we're living. We've lost, you know, people who, I love it when I hear from clients, you know, and they're like, "Oh, I have a garden, you know, and we go out for walks in the woods." And, you know, it's like they're connected. You feel it. They're connected.
Yeah.
And, you know, my clients who I love dearly that live in the cities, you know, I constantly am saying to them, go outside, go to the park, go upstate, go somewhere where you're getting out in nature, because we truly heal when we're in nature. And it's so funny, you know, you can talk to somebody and they say, oh, we went on this beautiful hike up into the blah, blah, blah wilderness, and I feel so much better. And it's like, yeah, nature heals.
I have to say that it's something I think about somewhat regularly. My wife and I were fortunate enough after 10 years living here in Santa Barbara to take our first vacation. And we planned to go to Yosemite for the Bracebridge dinner at the Majestic. I think it goes by another name these days. And then on up to Nevada City. And we were headed up from Yosemite, which, oh my gosh, I'd never been there before. My wife had. And it was just unbelievable. We drove in and there was snow everywhere. It was just gorgeous.
Wow.
And it was my first experience driving in snow. I had never driven in snow before.
Wow.
So I went very slow.
Mm-hmm.
But as we are leaving Yosemite, we found the small town and a diner, and we had our breakfast and we continued on. And we got on 99, I think it is,
mm-hmm.
going north. And the traffic was unbelievable. And we were starting to feel the stress. So the very next exit, we got off. Now, my wife was driving, so I reprogrammed the GPS and I said, avoid highways. And the next thing I knew, we were traveling, zigzagging between farm fields all the way to Nevada City.
Wow.
And it was the most incredible, beautiful, exciting journey. Even though it took longer, probably added 30, 40, 50 minutes, we were not in a rush.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're saying is absolutely true, especially being in Nevada City, a small town, mm-hmm. surrounded by the wilderness, surrounded by the woods. And we even went a little further north one day to visit some people up at a commune, if you will, called Ananda Village. And mm-hmm. I think about that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think
mm-hmm.
about that and wanting to get on the road so badly.
Right.
And not on the freeway, not on the highway, mm-hmm. not on I-5 or the at least the 101 going through Santa Barbara or down into Los Angeles. I don't even want to go south. I want to make sure that I go north.
Right. And again, I remind you, that feeling is really deep in that inner compass that you have of your migratory kind of, you know, yes, I need to fly north. You know, it's like we all have that sense, that inner compass that says time to go. And, you know, whether we listen to it or not is certainly each person's choice.
Yeah.
I wrote a chapter in this book called A Safe Place. And it's, to me, it's so important for us to understand where we feel and have safety. We don't necessarily feel safe all of the time.
You know,
finding that inside ourselves, I think, is very important.
And what's interesting is that a lot of times we physically might be in a safe place, but mm-hmm. we bring with us the technology to access the, I'll call it information loosely, that mm-hmm. makes it not a safe place. Because mm-hmm. we start to feel anxious and we start to feel angry and aggressive or fearful or whatever the case might mm-hmm. be. I mean, mm-hmm. my God, the last political campaign of 2016 was nothing but fear. It was mm-hmm. just fear, 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 fear. And mm-hmm. and I was able to stay out of it until September of 2016. I just mm-hmm. was able to mentally and spiritually just stay away from it. And then somehow there was this vortex and I got sucked in, you know. took me six months to get unsucked.
Can I read you a little bit of this?
Because yes.
I think that it would be nice for your audience to hear something of, you know, Bear's adventure in this book.
Please.
Okay. Bear could feel the earth's heartbeat as he sang songs about the land, the four-legged, winged ones, and the stars in the sky. Each song was blessed with his love and dedication for the earth. One day, Bear saw a shooting star cross the sky and fall down to earth. He wondered if his song called the star from the sky. He thought he better go check it out and see what had fallen to the planet. Bear traveled far and wide, singing and drumming the whole way. Finally, he reached the place where the star touched the earth. The moon shone bright and encouraged him to look closer. There in the middle of the crater sat a girl. She was singing a song that Bear knew. He said, "Excuse me, how do you know that song?" She looked up at Bear and smiled. She said, "I have known this song since before the beginning of time. The song came from the earth. I have visited this planet many times since you were born and have heard you singing her songs and drumming them into the universe. I was happy you came to find me." So that particular story has a lot to do with, you know, we've been visited by star beings forever. Yeah. And these demigods, which are much more benevolent than, you know, the aliens that we all refer to, grays and reptilians and, you know, all these different types of aliens. These are demigods. When they come, there is such a, you know, a recognition and understanding of what humanity is trying to accomplish. And that is, we are trying to evolve this dense physical form that's called human. We are evolving that lifetime after lifetime, incurring more and more karma. We are trying to evolve the consciousness of this dense physical form. Mm. So this is now, we are now reaching what is the end of a phase of humanity. And we began this phase, most of us, when we incarnated through during the time of Atlantis and Lemuria. And this is, you know, when Atlantis and Lemuria fell around 12,500 BC, when a big giant crater hit the earth, this new phase of humanity began. And so all of us, many of us, have been lifetime after lifetime evolving and working with this human form. Now we're coming to the end of that phase of humanity, and our children, our grandchildren, are the ones that will pick up the torch and carry it into this new phase that will begin when this one is over. And does that mean it's cataclysmic or something horrific is going to happen? No. I think the earth has the last say on everything that happens, and that she will do her thing, and she'll adjust and shift, and earthquakes and volcanic eruptions, like she always has, to bring in a new phase of humanity. And we can see it. We can see it in the children being born. These children are star seeds. Most of them have no past lives here on Earth. None.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. I was under the impression that every soul that exists has lived past lives. But at the same time, I've also experienced another interesting, shall we call it, philosophy, talking about life between lives. Mm. And I went through a conscious hypnotic state and was taken through my last life. Mm-hmm. My last life, which was actually kind of nice. I kind of liked it. I thought, gee, I wish I was back here now, with a couple of exceptions. But I was actually able to go through and see at the point of my own death, which was quite nice. I sat down on the porch of my cabin, knowing what was coming. And I just sat there and I let go and I left. Mm-hmm. Just nice, easy, and it's quite remarkable. We're talking with Sonia Grace, and we're going to talk more about all of this too here on Tell Me Your Story: New Paradigms for a New World. Would you please stay tuned?
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices by sharing with you Dancing with Raven and Bear. This is a book by Sonia Grace, who returns to our program. I was going to ask our microphones. She's coming to us via Skype after a five-year hiatus, so to speak, almost 5.5 years, and it's nice to have you back with us, and I hope that we can have you back as a regular here on the program to share with our listeners, share with our audience, not only the work that you're doing, but the importance of the work that even they are doing as they begin that process of taking in and hopefully assimilating. One of my favorite words from a book that it took me 5 or 6 years to read, A Stranger in a Strange Land. Mm-hmm. Now, I have the hard cover or hard printed version, which is rather thick, but I was able to read it audibly on Audible books, and I did not like the way it ended. I was very disappointed in the ending, but it was a great read. But the word I love, as opposed to assimilate, is to grok, which means to basically assimilate and to take into every cell of your being, every atom, that which you are wanting to understand. And so it's beyond just understanding. And they use that phrase an awful lot when they say, I grok it, I grok this, I grok that. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that we all can do the same in this context. But I also know, too, that you made a comment earlier in the previous segment in reference to how you were born with all of this wonderful stuff. And it's not that long ago, going back through time, that people like yourself who were born with this stuff didn't live long. They weren't allowed to live long because it was contrary to the powers that be and the philosophies that were being forced upon the peasants, those who were uneducated. And that's what we're trying to do here, is we're trying to educate people. And but it's up to each one of us to pursue that education. We're just trying to put that out there. But even to this day, I think, there are still segments of our society that they say, no, this is not of God. This is not of the, this isn't divine. This is, this is evil, and this will lead you down the road to degradation and all of this kind of stuff,
Right.
And
right.
This is trouble, rhymes with P, stands for pool, la, la, la.
Right.
What about, what about the aspect of, and I don't know if this is the right term, Sonia, the mainstreaming of this kind of information, because it's less on the fringes, but it's not quite in the mainstream.
Right. I feel that everything is in divine order, and it happens when it's supposed to happen. And this book is hitting the market at a time when I feel people more so now than ever need hope. And if there's one thing that this book provides, is hope. Because I feel that when we reach a state of hopelessness, we truly have hit bottom. We're at the bottom, and the only way we can go is up.
Mm-hmm.
And to get out of that hopelessness. And that if we remember that it's our faith in why we're here. We're here as the caretakers of this planet. And the mission statement for humanity is to love at the deepest level of our being. If we can stay connected to those things, then we will always have hope, because love is, hope eternal. Love springs forth hope that there will be that same feeling, that same connection with the land and people and the stars and everything that we experience. And yes, I agree with you. There are many religions that have suppressed us and tried to make choices that we want to make wrong or not okay. And I always tell people that I respect all religion, but I prescribe to none, because in my spiritual practice, I'm very much Hopi, and that's my practice. But I'm also really respectful of other people's choices. I do not feel that we need to be so restricted in certain ways of viewing things. Again, why I wrote the book, so it can open people up to different realities. And I also feel that we have lived for centuries in a state of fear, and we've been very fearful of the unseen world. We're still fearing alien life, you know, possibly having come to Earth. We're still in a state of fear of that. And yet it happens. It is happening. And we don't necessarily come from a lifetimes of experience where fear has been resolved karmically. Mm-hmm. As a collective, that's one of the biggest karmic pieces we have yet to heal, is our fear. And I know with me, you know, the joke that I have with my friends and, you know, close family members is, I just want to get through this lifetime and not be, you know, burned at the stake. Because I have lots of lifetimes where I have been, you know, considered a heretic and killed for it.
Yeah.
So
it's very interesting. I worked for, I think I shared this with you before, but for 15 years for a Christian radio station. Mm-hmm. And I said that, you know, I was asking questions that only a heretic would ask. And I said, you want to stamp a brand me on the forehead with a big H? I will wear it proudly. Because mm-hmm. what I am being told doesn't make any sense. And we were given this brain, and we were given the ability to reason and think and process the information that we come across, that we are able to mine, so to speak.
Right.
And when it doesn't make sense, that's when you have to start questioning. And I think one of the other challenges is in our educational system, because, and I joked about this many years ago, how, you know, I had to sue my grade school and high schools for their malpractice, educational malpractice, because I didn't get the kinds of pieces of information that I would have loved to have gotten while I was in school. About a more in-depth education about the Hopis and the Navajos and the Yavapais and the Havasupai and all of the different tribes just in Arizona alone should have been an entire course, let alone the various civilizations that existed in China, in Southeast Asia, in Australia, in the Middle East, in Africa. Oh, my God. Right. They say that there's a place, I guess, a place in Africa that's supposedly the birthplace, the cradle of civilization. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was Alexandria. Again, I don't know, because I don't remember ever getting this information. Either that or I was asleep or something.
Right,
And then, go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm on a lot of shows on Gaia TV, and one show that I did in particular that I'm on, season one and season two, is Ancient Civilizations. And because of my last book, Spirit Traveler, I, you know, literally time travel to these places. I'm able to, again, defy time and space and go see what happened, why it was built. I'm shown the beings who actually created Stonehenge and Tiwanaku and the Temple of Kukulcan. It's a fascinating book. And I, on this show, I talked about an ancient tribe, the Dagon tribe in Africa. And they, you know, they're really connected to some of this ancient, you know, cradle of civilization mm-hmm. that we're talking about. And they have this amazing experience of these beings coming to them, and these beings coming from, you know, our galaxy, became actually embodied and became the dolphins and the whales, which is, I mean, I know you've heard of this, where people are just obsessed with dolphins and whales and feel really connected to all of that. It's like all of these things that are here on Earth have a very specific story and meaning as to why they're here. And there's a line from my book, Dancing with Raven and Bear, that says, this is in the middle of a chapter, but it says, the lessons of mankind aren't the lessons of the animal kingdom. And that we are, we're the animals of the world are much, much higher, more evolved than the human soul. Yes, we are. We're young in human form. Our souls are infinite. We have always been, we will always be. But the animals, the souls of the dog, the cat, the horse, the llama, you know, the lion, they're of a different consciousness. They're a higher consciousness than we are. And I think it's so ironic that, you know, we go out there and kill them and, yeah. And wonder why, you know, our lives don't go right or things don't go well for us. It's really a shame that we have missed the mark of how intelligent animals are and how intelligent this planet is. You know, she hears us. She hears everything that we say. Mm-hmm. Our words, our voice is a vibration, and it goes out not only to the earth, but to the entire universe.
Talk to me about the importance of the awareness of the power of words in that context.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, to the Tibetan monks who sit in silence forever in a day, mm-hmm. you know, of course they know how powerful that sound is, that voice, those words are. You know, in my own native culture, you know, someone might say three words to you, but they impact you for the rest of your life. It's not all this garbly goop of here, let me just go on and on and on and indulge myself and my ego so I can hear myself talk. It's really simple. And we have lost the simplicity that is truly the power of what our words carry, the vibration, the energy. We are creating our future with all of this that's coming out of our mouths. And that vibration or sound, I think, needs to be reconsidered. mm-hmm. Because if we're having a bad day and we're, you know, railing on this and railing on that and, you know, getting really worked up over that vibration's going out there. And guess what? The universe is going to match it and say, oh, this is how you feel. Let me match that and give that back to you. And, you know, because it's energy. It's all about energy. So I absolutely encourage people to think about what is the vibe you're putting out there. If you're having a hard day, yes, process your feelings and release them. Give them back to the earth and get back to what you really want to be creating. Because as a collective, we are creating. We are. Our energy comes together and we create, you know, a bigger feeling.
Yeah. Well, I couldn't agree with you more on all of that. It just, it's, you know, the level of frustration that we all get to, we could avoid if we would just take that time. I'm very fortunate that in moving to Santa Barbara, we are living in a rural part of the area where when we first moved to the property over 11 years ago, we had a herd, if you will, or a flock of wild turkeys who we would feed. I mean, they were just, they were incredible. And we've had deer, and we've had, matter of fact, this morning before I came to work, you know, our dog was in our backyard, or what we call the backyard. I find it funny that we fence in an area and call it our backyard, and we're in the middle of the wilderness. Was barking at this little rabbit who knew that it couldn't get to him. So he just sat there eating the grass and having a good time. We've had deer. We've even had a bear or two up on the property. And never a bad incident. Never. I still remember that one incident my wife and I had where this brown bear was up there and he was eating off of this plum tree. And I was taking care of a situation down at our old chicken coop. And I went up the hill and to the garbage can, and I heard this rustling. I didn't know what it was at the time. And I said, I just stopped. No fear. Just, okay, listen. All of a sudden, the bear stood up looking over the hedge, looked at me. I looked at him. Oh, okay. I went to the garbage can, took care of my business, went back, and he went back to eating plums. And, of course, I'm coming back to the house, and my wife sees me walking down the road. She says, what's going on? I said, I just saw a bear. It's no big deal to me, you know. Not that right. I've seen a lot of bears. It was just like, right. it was just no big deal. So, I want to see the bear. I want to see the bear. Right. So I said, okay, let me finish what I'm doing. I had to catch up with her to going up the road and up the hill. Mm-hmm. We stopped at the top of the hill where I saw the bear the first time. Again, heard the rustling. He looked up. Only this time, I got the sense that this time he looked up, being annoyed, said, I'm trying to eat in peace here. I'm not going to stay. So he walked across the roadway that we were on, out onto the main roadway, and away.
Wow.
But no fear. None whatsoever.
That's great. That's great. That's a beautiful story. I love that you, you know, had an encounter with a bear, because not many people get that opportunity.
Yeah. Now, we weren't trying to get... This is another thing. We've seen on various social media sites people who actually intentionally try to get involved with some of these large creatures.
Yeah.
One guy on a highway or a roadway trying to harass, if you will. I couldn't call it anything else other than that. An elk.
Mm-hmm. I saw that.
He's lucky that he's still alive. And I believe he ended up getting charged because what he did was illegal.
That was outrageous. Yes.
These are the kinds of things that,
but
you know.
This is what I just talked about. Yeah. This is the ego. If there is anything that has the biggest challenge for anyone of any spiritual path that they walk to overcome is the ego. The ego is that tremendous firewall that protects all of us, come hell or high water. You know, and we don't always recognize that layer of protection is not necessarily serving us to the way that the ego is meant to serve us. When we are in a state of inner peace, when we are it's centered, and we have really understood our inner process and worked on our emotional wounds and gone through a healing process, then the ego starts to shift, because now there isn't this need to, you know, somehow defend and support and act out all this stuff that has wounded us from our past. So the guy with the elk, I mean, that was to me a real wow. He's really out there with his ego and wanting to prove something, not only to himself but to his audience, which were all these cars watching mortified that he was that he was trying to take on the elk.
Yeah. I mean, I certainly didn't want any harm to come to him, but by the same token, I'm sitting there going, you know what, if he gets gored, he deserved it.
Yeah, I hear you.
It is unfortunate that you know, there are folks out there that feel the need to do these kinds of things, and it's like these creatures. Matter of fact, I was driving down the main highway. It's called Highway 154, and the other day, and thank goodness it was a good 400 or 500 feet down the road. I saw this squirrel scurrying across the road. He'd already gone past the middle, so he wasn't in any danger from me, as long as he didn't turn around. And fortunately, he continued to scurry before the cars in the opposite direction were coming up the hill. But the one thing that somebody told me a long time ago was that whether it's squirrels or birds, for that matter, when it comes to human beings and their things, cars, planes, etc., they don't have any points of reference. They really don't have any points of reference in that regard.
Right.
Right.
Because we're no longer living next to the earth and really understanding what is the medicine of these animals and what are they telling me. You know, I do a process with people where I actually take them through a journey introducing them to their animal totem, which are 7 animals in total. And when they get introduced to those animals, there is then the responsibility to take care of them, to feed them, to communicate with them, and to understand when you see one of your totem animals crossing your path, there is a really specific message in that for you, and to pay attention. You know, in my book, Dancing with Raven and Bear, there's an illustration that I did, and the illustration title is Bear Sang His Medicine Song Into Her Heart, and he has his paw on her heart. And I just want to say to your listeners, you know, whenever you feel like you're not getting, you know, what you need, or you're feeling really, you know, hopelessness, or any of these things that can pull us down energetically, you know, think about that. Think about Bear's paw being right on your heart and singing his medicine song into your heart. Because I tell people all the time, you know, if you ask Creator to put his and her hand on your back and support you in the support that you need and that you're looking for, that will happen. And it is having faith that those things will happen that is what will help and create our human race to survive.
Hmm. How does one find out who or what their totem animal is?
Well, they call me and they have book an appointment. And, you know, that's part of what I do. I mean, I do a lot of different things, but yeah, people set up appointments. I'm booked out about 3 months ahead. So just if people go to my website and want to book an appointment, just know that I'm booking the end of December right now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I am intrigued by all of this, and one of these days maybe I'll, I mean, someone has actually told me what my totem animal is. Mm-hmm. Now, does the totem animal, is that kind of with you for life?
Yes, absolutely. These animals are with you for your life. Mm, yes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So what's
looks like
on,
you'll have to call me.
I'll do that.
Okay.
What's on the horizon for Sonia and the work that she's doing?
Well, I have a meditation retreat coming up November 8th through the 11th. I'm in Hawaii on the north shore of Oahu doing a retreat that's all about energy and why we're so darn tired all the time, and helping people sort of get in touch with where their energy is going and putting a plug in the leak in the drain there. And then March 28th to April 1st, I have a wonderful retreat up in Bluff, Utah. And that's right at the mouth of Monument Valley and all these beautiful red rock country. And we're going to be exploring a lot of the earth medicine ways and connecting with the earth. So those are I'm really excited about all three of those. I'm always at the Conscious Life Expo in LA in February. And I've got a live luncheon with George Noory in Sherman Oaks in Los Angeles, February 19th. So everything's on my calendar, on my website, and you can find me somewhere at some time.
Mm-hmm. In 2019, and I cannot believe I'm actually saying that, I was actually reading something in regards primarily to horoscopes. And I'm curious about the stars and Native American as well as Norse mythology and or medicine and so forth, in terms of using the stars to help us along.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody looks to the stars, and certainly in Norse mythology, they everything was governed by the stars. I mean, these people were sailors; they had boats. You know, and the same with Hopi. I mean, they're aligned with Orion. They're aligned with different constellations where I think that, you know, the Kachinas come from the stars. They're star beings. Yes, it's all to me about the stars. And I believe that each one of us comes from a particular planet and place in this galaxy and beyond. And that as infinite souls having a human experience, we have taken some time out from our home planets to come here and to do exactly what we're doing, which is to evolve this dense physical form that we inhabit. So, yes, I think we're all from somewhere else in the universe, and that this beautiful planet Earth has this incredible opportunity for us to really bring in a higher consciousness and evolve the human race.
You know, my wife made an interesting observation, and you're sort of alluding to this. She said that of all of the species on the planet, man is the only one, the human being is the only one that seems to find the need for clothing and shelter in the fashion in which we have developed it. No other species has done this. You've got animals that will burrow into the ground. Some will live in caves as far as shelter. Some just hang out in the trees. Some are just out in the open. But, I mean, you're not going to see a polar bear, hopefully, God willing, down in the equator any more than you're going to see an iguana at the North or South Pole.
Yeah, because nor are they going to be shopping at Macy's.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly. Yeah, right. But man is the only one that feels the need to do this. And so her assessment, her thought was that man is not indigenous to this planet.
Exactly. And if you look back into, again, my work in Spirit Traveler and some of the shows I've done on Gaia, I have been told by my guides, who are high angelic beings, that the human form, this form that we inhabit, came to Earth 20 million years ago. And when this form, humans, came to Earth 20 million years ago, we actually originated from a planet that has the mathematical equation of zero. And zero is the only number that is not in duality. And everything that I teach, everything that I share with people, if again, looking further into my work, is about how we exist in this soup called duality. We measure outside of ourselves what is good and bad, what is right and wrong, but it's all through an outer measuring system. And duality as we know it now is splitting apart, which is why we have these huge extremes going on. What is good? What is bad? Oh my God, did you see that on TV? Oh, that's horrible. I mean, it's like we have these giant division of good and bad, right and wrong. Mm. It's because it's literally dissolving. We will not be living in a dualistic reality 100 years down the road. So we're all trying to navigate still using this outer measuring system when in fact what we need to do is go inside. It's an inside job now, and we have to find how we measure good, bad, right, and wrong from that internal compass that we talked about earlier. Mm. So this, I mean, it was so brilliant to me that where we actually originated from was in a non-dualistic reality, because that is where we're going.
Well, that's been my comment of frustration on this program for a decade or more, that the ancient wisdom teachings tell us where we come from, as you've stated. Mm-hmm. It tells us where we're going to, as you've stated. And it tells us where we are, this dualistic place. And I sit here going, why? What in the world is the point of doing this this craziness? And I have to say that I get so, I have gotten frustrated over that whole aspect. But at the same time, it's one of those things. I read something just the other day. It's one of these apps that gives you these wonderful paragraphs of information every day. And it talked about that in the sense that if you can find a place of equilibrium and equanimity, if you will, between the extremes, and you will be able to find that place of both, and this is a current phrase, that place of mindfulness and peacefulness. And it's not going to say that your life's going to be perfect, but it's how you respond to those quote-unquote imperfections along the way, the challenges and so forth. Because if you do go to one of those extremes, the law of the universe that for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction, you're going to swing all the way over to the other extreme. So if you can get yourself into that middle space, it's like the example of a pendulum. If you are down at the base of the pendulum, you're swinging left to, if you will, left to right, back and forth, right? And you're feeling that swing. But if you can shimmy up to the place where it's attached and where it's just pivoting.
Right.
That's the place you want to find yourself.
Yeah, it's in the center. It's being centered.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're really off balance, out of center in many aspects on the planet. So,
So you say about 100 years, huh?
Yeah, in about 100 years, I think we'll be out of this dualism and really, truly having to operate from a completely different place, which is relying and trusting on our own inner feelings, our own inner understanding at that soul level, what is right and wrong, what is good and bad. And this has nothing to do with religion. It has nothing to do with, you know, belief systems. This is who we are as souls, that we have to now go within and navigate from within.
I'll leave you with this passage from Scripture, from the Bible, New Testament, where Jesus is talking to his disciples, and basically they were talking about the concept of perfection. And I studied this quite a bit and pondered it for a long time. He says, "Be ye perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect." And I thought, okay, what is perfect? And in the context of God. And it dawned on me that it had nothing to do with dualism. It had nothing to do with good, right, good, wrong, good, bad, right, wrong, black, white, up, down, left, right. It had to do with being perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. Being, just being who you are. That's perfection.
Right.
That's the center.
Absolutely. And we're so hyped up with having to be more, be more, look better, be this, be that. We're so hyped up with it that we forget the simplicity, again, of just being ourselves and having what we bring to the table on a soul level being enough.
Yeah.
It's enough. I mean, gosh, you know, you think about people in the old days and how hard they worked, and, you know, they loved each other. They loved their family. And, you know, they worked the fields and brought the food in, and that was their life. And they weren't worried about how many people liked them on Facebook.
Yeah.
They weren't worried about, you know, well, did I take the right picture? Is that a good selfie? I mean, my God, you know, it's like, I just so want to liberate people and say, be free. You know, this is really about us having a profound experience being in physical form, because our natural state of being is our spirit form, our soul. That's our natural state.
Yeah.
So find that freedom in this physical form.
Sonia Grace, I want to thank you so much for sharing with us here on the program. I do look forward to having you back. Maybe we'll even have you back before the end of the year to talk more about this and other things that you're working on, as well as maybe a future book that may be coming up.
Thanks, I'd love that.
Events that are coming up in 2019 as well. And invite you, if I didn't the last time, I want to invite you, should you be in the Santa Barbara area, we'd love to have you in studio to continue the conversation.
Okay, that would be great. Thank you so much. It's great to talk to you.
Before we let you go, I have three final questions, but I do want to let our listeners know that soniagrace.com is the website. We will be linked to it as well. The book, Dancing with Raven and Bear, it's a book of earth medicine and animal magic. First question is, who is Sonia Grace?
Sonia Grace is a mystic, healer, award-winning author, and very humble human being who is trying to help people heal, transform, and come to their own sense of inner peace on this planet.
What is it that you hope to achieve or accomplish through the work that you are doing now?
I hope to accomplish giving people a sense of clarity and peace and a sense of who they are at the core, being able to navigate and, you know, pursue the things they want to pursue, heal at a much deeper level so that they become free of the cycles and patterns that they have had for lifetimes.
And what is your life's purpose?
To be in service, to serve Creator and the earth, and to be a vessel for that energy of God, Creator, coming down through the top of my head and the earth coming up through the bottom of my feet, and the two infusing, and there's a riot of activity at the heart level, and boom. You know, that's what it's about for me, is to create, to inspire, and to heal.
Again, Sonia, thank you so much for sharing with us about Dancing with Raven and Bear, a book of earth medicine and animal magic. And we encourage our listeners to go to soniagrace.com. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.